The pressure on data centers has never been greater. Whether you're expanding capacity, supporting AI workloads, or building new facilities, Graybar works alongside you with the solutions, specialists, and logistics expertise you need today. We help you power performance every step of the way, so your operation is ready now. Yep, Graybar does that.
Jake from State Farm. I just beat my running PR, so I'm celebrating with a Banana Bonanza smoothie.
Hey, and you can keep celebrating when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling your home and auto with the State Farm Personal Price Plan. Go bananas.
I will. Hey, make it a large.
Bundling. Just another way to save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
In Pittsburgh, we've always forged things. We just forge them differently now. Flavors bold enough to stop you mid-bite. Art bright enough to change the way you see the world. Neighborhoods alive with color, music, and motion. In Pittsburgh, everything we ever forged was made to spark something more. Come see what sparks you at visitpittsburgh.com.
Whether you're on the go or at the ballpark, T-Mobile is built to keep you connected wherever the game takes you. With America's best network, you know your phone is going to work, even in a crowded stadium. Last summer, in the middle of a packed stadium, I lost track of my friends after a long seventh-inning stretch. One quick message and a shared location later, we found each other without missing the next pitch. And when the walk-off hit came, I had the video uploaded and shared before I even left my seat. And on the days I can't make it to the ballpark, streaming the game on the go feels just as electric. No buffering, no interruptions, just every moment as it happens. Find out how baseball hits different with T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/MLB. Legal disclaimer. Fastest based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, H2 2025. Best based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, H2 2025.
Cuts in on the right foot, launches a golazo!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, score!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer. And brought to you in part by Michelob Ultra, official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game, the Odyssey app, the 92.9 YouTube page as well. That's how you get AST all summer long. You get it as a podcast as well on Off the Woodwork. This is week two of the marathon, and we haven't even started the tournament yet. This is my, I think, eighth straight day, maybe ninth. I did a weird one where I jumped in on Abe TL and spent like an hour with him, so I count that in the 50 straight days. So it's starting to get interesting now that we're getting closer to this tournament. We'll be talking a lot about Spain tonight. They're playing their final friendly in Puebla, Mexico right now, about to kick off. It's on FS2 if you're looking for something to watch as we chat. That one is against Peru, who did not qualify for the World Cup. This is one of the cool things about this tournament right now, where we are in the calendar. Teams are playing their final matches before the tournament. Some are playing their final matches before they come to the United States or Mexico or Canada, and they're getting ready for this. But these games, the last games before, because FIFA wants to protect the surfaces in the World Cup stadiums, these games are being played in other places. So you're getting some very interesting settings for some of these games. And it's a way for this World Cup, in a way, to spread out, because Puebla is not going to get to host World Cup games in Mexico this time around. They did in 1986. They get this game, and it's a great crowd with a lot of Spanish support in Puebla. We've seen it in a lot of different random places, like College Station, Texas. with Argentina and Honduras in front of a packed house over the weekend. Tomorrow night, and we'll talk about it a little bit at the end of the segment, Argentina and Iceland in Auburn, Alabama. Messi in the SEC stadiums is fascinating to see. But the games on the field matter too, and that's what's interesting as we start to try to get a sense of what we're going to see that counts starting on Thursday at 3 o'clock as Mexico plays South Africa. I think if anything, and I was talking to Chris Thomas about this about an hour ago when I was chatting with him, I think if anything, the tournament has gotten more wide open the closer we've gotten to it. I felt like before there were clear separations in tiers of four teams that could win it, and then another six or so that maybe make a final, maybe make a run to a semifinal. Then you're kind of scrambling beyond that, and you have to depend on where the draw suits you and what happens in the bracket. All of the top four teams have something that could derail them. The next group have been a little more inconsistent, but a lot of them have shown enough to make you think that they could make a run. Germany is one of those in that next group. A good win over the U.S. on Saturday. I think Germany has shown that they can be a problem. Spain is showing they can be a problem in the second minute. Right now, they've already scored against Peru. And this is a Spanish team that does need to show something after a 1-1 draw with Iraq. We'll talk about Spain a little bit more in the next segment, but let's bounce around some results and what we've learned over the last 24 to 36 hours. Let's start in San Diego, Colombia and Jordan. Jordan is in the tournament for the first time. Colombia has been very up and down, in my opinion, in terms of what to expect from this Colombian team. We saw some very good performances at times from them in the World Cup qualifiers. We saw some not so great performances in the March window, especially where they looked outclassed. They looked good against Jordan, a team that they should have looked good against. And here's the interesting thing. We've talked about this a lot with Argentina and superstition. Colombia is a little superstitious too. Colombia's great World Cup in 2014, where they got to the quarterfinal and James Rodriguez became a household name. The last team they played before that tournament, it was Jordan. Maybe scheduled intentionally for that reason. John Arias, he scored both goals in the 40th and the 54th minute on either side of halftime. The first was set up by James Rodriguez. The second was a header off of a cross from Santiago Arias. That brace brings John Arias to 6 international goals for Colombia. He needs to step up in this tournament because Luis Diaz is the Colombian talisman. He's the one who is going to really carry this team as far as they can go. But he needs help because James Rodriguez is getting towards the end of his career. Juan Fernando Quintero, same thing. Somebody's got to be a running buddy for Luis Diaz. John Arias, who really came to the fore last summer in the Club World Cup and got a move to Europe, he needs to get back to that form. Two goals in this one, really big for him. Nestor Lorenzo, the manager for Colombia, he talked about how good the defense was in this game. They get the clean sheet. He wants the team to be a little bit sharper, and he wants them to be a little more aggressive as well. Those were his main takeaways from the postgame comments. They head to Guadalajara, Mexico. They will prepare for their World Cup opener against Uzbekistan on June 17th. All right, Croatia today, they beat Slovenia 2-1, and Croatia needed a good performance because they lost to Belgium in their send-off game in Croatia. This is their final friendly before they head over to the U.S. It's a big response. Zlatko Dalic, the manager for Croatia, he changed their system a little bit. He went from a 3-center-back setup against Belgium to a 4-2-3-1. I wonder what they'll do against England. That's a tough opener for Croatia. England is a team that generally starts slow in tournaments. Croatia is an older team. They're extremely talented. Luka Modric, who opened the scoring in this one, still a great player, but these might be his last games. There's been a lot of talk about him retiring at the end of the tournament. Croatia's got to start this tournament well, and a game against England, it's not easy for them. I worry about the momentum going against them. If they don't do well in the game against England, for example, I worry about them being able to dial up enough energy to change that momentum. It's a manageable group after that, but can they get through it? I worry about Croatia because of that age. I worry about Argentina for the same reason. I think older teams are going to struggle in the heat, going to struggle with the travel, going to struggle with some of the aspects of this tournament that are just going to be a challenge. The Netherlands have been a team that's had a lot of challenges coming into this. They beat Uzbekistan 2-1 today. It was a closed-door match in New York. Cody Gakpo converted a penalty in the 97th minute to win that match. Now, they dominated. They had about 70% of the ball. Their XG was 4.6, so they should have won this handily, but they didn't score in real time. They needed two penalties from Gakpo to win this game. Finishing has been a huge issue for the Dutch. They got that first goal in the 32nd after a foul, then the late one in stoppage time. Now, they have another issue, too. Well, they have a couple. Guus Til, the substitute, he was sent off in the 86th minute for a deliberate handball. Whether that red card will carry over into the World Cup opener against Japan on June 13th, FIFA is going to make that decision here in the next 48 hours. It shouldn't, because FIFA has set the precedent of rescinding those final red cards, or rescinding the suspensions is maybe the better way to put it. Cristiano Ronaldo is a player who got a red card that he should have missed a game at the World Cup. He won't. Nicolas Otamendi, Moises Caicedo, same thing. So Guus Til should be fine, but FIFA's got to make that ruling. Uzbekistan, full credit to them. They are Atlanta's Uzbekistan, by the way. They'll be training in Marietta at the Atlanta United Children's Healthcare of Atlanta training ground. And they'll be arriving very soon. They're doing an open training session for local youth on Wednesday. They leveled the game. They went behind to the Dutch, and they leveled it 1-1 in first half stoppage time. In second half stoppage time. Igor Sergeyev, he got the goal. It's big for Uzbekistan to be able to show they can bounce back against a team like the Netherlands, because the problem and what Uzbekistan's going to struggle with in this tournament is scoring goals consistently. I think defensively they'll be okay. They won't be easy to break down. But offensively, they're going to be challenged. They're going to have to find goals to get out of this group. France, one of the favorites. They beat Northern Ireland 3-1 today in their send-off game. This is a bounce back after the 2-1 loss to Ivory Coast last Thursday. Michael Olise, he scored all three goals for France. And when you're talking about potential breakout players, and a guy at Bayern Munich, I don't know if you would normally consider him a breakout player, but when you're on a team next to Kylian Mbappe and you become the focal point, I think that's a breakout situation. Olise could be that. He was in unbelievable form for Bayern towards the end of the season. A hat trick here. He's in great shape coming into this tournament. And I think France needs him because Mbappe hasn't been, and he hasn't been fully healthy. Olise might have to carry the load for France, at least early in the tournament. He'll get help from Ousmane Dembele. He'll get help from Désiré Doué. A lot of talented players in that attack, but Olise might be the focal point. Aurelien Tchouaméni, after the game, he said, "We're glad to have him with us. He's electric, very efficient." They're all looking at him as the dude right now. Now, Kylian Mbappe is still in that team. There have been some reports about him not being able to train in full. Hasn't really been talked about a ton, but there was some video of him leaving a training session early. So stay tuned. And here's the other thing about France. And this is very important to keep in mind going into the tournament. In each of their last five matches, the French have conceded at least one goal. That's the worst run they've had since 2022 in terms of conceding goals. And that was going into the World Cup that time around. You're going to have to win a tight game somewhere in this tournament. You're going to have to be able to pull a clean sheet somewhere. France has got to show an ability to do that. Offensively, they can run and gun with you, but they're going to have to win a game a little ugly. It always happens to every team in the tournament. There's that one game where you can't score, whatever reason, you can't find the back of the net, and your defense is going to have to carry you. I don't know if France can. We're all going to find out here starting next week or later this week. For the U.S., big news today, Chris Richards, he went through the full training session. It was an open training session in front of over 5,000 fans in California. That's huge. now you have to see how he responds from it. Remember, he had a badly sprained ankle for Crystal Palace. You can get through one training session. Do you have swelling afterwards? Can he train tomorrow? Wait and see what reporters have to say about tomorrow's training session. If he trains in full tomorrow, you can feel really good about Chris Richards in this World Cup. If he is limited tomorrow, you're going to have to worry. I don't think you worry to the point that you take him out of the roster, but I think you worry in the point of him being able to play game one against Paraguay on Friday, and you start to then think about game two. We'll see. We'll be focused on those updates. We'll talk about it tomorrow night. What's on tap? It's brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26. What's on tap is the defending World Cup champions of Argentina headed to Jordan Air Stadium in Auburn, Alabama to play Iceland tomorrow night. We will hear on, I think we will get him on this show at some point, John Nelson, who you know from Atlanta United pregame and postgame coverage. He is headed to the match with a whole bunch of people. It should be a gigantic crowd. If Argentina wins, do they roll Toomer's Corner? I don't know. What are the Argentines going to make of Auburn, Alabama, and Toomer's Corner for that matter? I mean, the Argentines get into the local customs. Maybe they do. I don't know. Maybe the Argentines roll it with the light blue toilet paper. Who knows? Do they have mate? Are they going to have the choripan in Auburn for our Argentines? Can't wait to see all the scenes out of Auburn for that one. All right, coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight, we are going to deep dive into La Roja, Spain. We're going to see them twice. First two games in the tournament are here in Atlanta. We'll talk about Spain and where they stand coming into the tournament next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Into the back of the net!
Goal! Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight
with Jason Longshore.
Welcome back. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app and on the 92.9 YouTube. Don't forget, we will sign off on the radio after the next segment. Stay on YouTube. If you have questions, you want to dig into this tournament, you want to talk about players to watch, you want to talk about teams to watch, we'll get into all of that after 11 o'clock on the 92.9 YouTube. That's where you can see the entire Atlanta Soccer Tonight show pretty much every time that it airs from now through the World Cup final. You can always get the podcast edition as well on Off the Woodwork on either the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. Let's jump into this Spain team because we're going to see them in their first two games in the tournament. I was really excited when the draw came out and we got the team that at that time was number one in the FIFA rankings for its first two games. It's going to be interesting to see what the crowd looks like. If you're a Spain fan and you're able to come and see your team twice in the same place, I would imagine that's going to do pretty well at the box office. I would imagine we're going to see lots of people from Madrid, from Barcelona, from Valencia, from all over Spain making their way here. And here's the other thing about this tournament that I think is an underrated element that maybe isn't talked about enough. This is really the only country in the world where all of these teams, all 48 of them, are going to be able to play in the United States and have, to some degree, part of their country's fan base already here or within close distance. That's what's special about the tournament in the United States. And we're already seeing elements of it. I mean, Algeria arrived in Lawrence, Kansas last night in the middle of the night, I think after midnight. And there were hundreds of people lining the streets outside the airport in Lawrence, Kansas to welcome Algeria to the United States for the World Cup. We're seeing the huge crowds all over for Argentina. We've seen the huge crowds for England. We've seen the huge crowds for Haiti. It's another one that I think is very underrated. Yeah, you're not going to have a lot of people traveling from Haiti for that game, but you're going to have a large Haitian crowd in Atlanta when they play Morocco in that final group stage game here. There's just so many stories, and it's been really cool on this show to be able to dig into them. You know, We're going to talk a lot about the U.S. men's national team. We already have. We will continue to do so. We'll all be watching Chris Richards and his return from injury. The Birmingham, Alabama center back is essential for the U.S. to make a run. And I think everybody is hoping that they will make that run. There's no guarantees. And with Richards being questionable at this stage, you worry about the team defensively. You talked about France in the last segment. The U.S. has given up a lot of goals in its last four games. You need Chris Richards in a big, big way. He's not going to be at his best in game one, but can he get through it and can he stay healthy the rest of the tournament? It's huge. But what's been cool about this show, and I think just digging into this and talking to a wide range of folks about the tournament, there's so many stories. And Spain is a huge one for me. They're 1-0 up right now against Peru in Puebla. It's 22nd minute. They scored very quickly. Mikel Oyarzabal got that goal in the second minute. He's a player that doesn't get a ton of attention for this team. He's leading the line tonight as the number nine. He's been a consistent goal scorer because for all of Spain being a team that is driven by Lamine Yamal and being driven by Nico Williams, it's a collective, and that's classic Spanish football. We've seen this really since the 2008 European Championship win. Now, the style has evolved. It's not the same tiki-taka, which, look, if you compare the 2008 European Championship winners for Spain to the 2012 version, they were very different. Similar players, many of the same ones, but that team had gotten older. And that team used possession in more of a defensive way. The 2008 version, a little more of an offensive style. This Spain, I think, is more of that offensive style. Now, how strong is that offense? We're going to have to wait and see. Lamine Yamal, Nico Williams, Victor Munoz, they did not travel to Puebla for this game. They stayed in Chattanooga. And that's another one of these stories that's just amazing. Lamine Yamal hanging out in Chattanooga, Tennessee, getting ready for a World Cup where they go in as one of the favorites. Kids in Chattanooga had a chance to see Lamine Yamal at an open training session, one of the best young players in the world. That's going to inspire those kids who saw that for the rest of their soccer journeys. Like, that's what's just unbelievable about this. The World Cup is in 16 cities, but it's in so many more than that. The effects are going to be felt so much wider than just those 16 cities. So, Yamal and Williams, it sounds like they're getting closer. Yamal's been dealing with a hamstring injury since the end of Barcelona's season. He missed the friendly against Iraq, the 1-1 draw in La Coruña last Thursday. De La Fuente, the manager, he did update reporters upon arriving in Puebla yesterday. He said all three, Munoz, Williams, and Yamal, they're all within the expected timelines to arrive for the game a week from tonight in Atlanta at Mercedes-Benz Stadium or Atlanta Stadium for those of you who want to follow that one. The most important thing about those guys and where they stand right now for De La Fuente is this is what they expected. You haven't had any setbacks. You haven't had any slower recoveries. This is what they expected coming in. Everything is as planned right now. He expects them to be available for the Cabo Verde match. Now, being available doesn't mean you start, but could we see Lamine Yamal next Monday in Atlanta? Yeah, I think there's a chance of it. Cabo Verde is going to be an interesting opponent. They're a good defensive team. This is their first time in it. This is a very small country, but they went toe-to-toe with some of the best of Africa over the past couple of years in World Cup qualifying, in AFCON qualifying. It's a very good team. Spain is better. But Cabo Verde playing their first ever World Cup game, it's going to be an interesting one next Monday. I'm really looking forward to it. The draw against Iraq, and yeah, it concerned me about Spain. When you see something like that, you worry a bit because Iraq is a team that's going to struggle in this tournament. They did qualify. Spain just never really got the momentum going. And the thing to keep in mind about it is De La Fuente, the manager, said he experimented during that match. It was his most experimental match in terms of trying things. He said he wanted to try some different things. He wanted to give opportunities to players. Nobody got injured. That was all he was worried about. It was heavily rotated, and he was looking for combinations in it. I don't know if he really found anything in it, but I don't know if the result means that much because of the way he managed that match. So no Yamal, no Williams tonight. You don't know if they'll be able to start game one. But you look at this team and you look at the lineup tonight, and it wouldn't shock me if you see this lineup next Monday. Unai Simón in goal. Two fullbacks in a 4-2-3-1 in Cucurella and Llorente that can both fly up and down the flanks and get forward and join the attack. Pau Cubarsí and Aymeric Laporte are your center backs. Laporte, veteran, solid. Pace can be a little bit of an issue. Cubarsí, younger, Barcelona center back. I think you've got a good combination there. The midfield, Rodri, you know he's going to sit at the base of that midfield and just dictate and just take care of things. Another one that, yeah, he's had a lot of injury issues. I think his health is very important to this team, but he gives them such security on the field, wearing the captain's armband, just gives you structure. So to have him in front of those two center backs, you've got that trio that can just be the base of everything for Spain in the way that they want to play. Pedri, Fabian Ruiz in the midfield tonight, along with Rodri. On the flanks, you've got Alex Baena and Ferran Torres, and then up top, the goal scorer so far tonight, Mikel Oyarzabal. It's a very good Spanish team. You look at the bench, you've got Gavi, who I think will be a handful in this tournament. Mikel Merino can contribute. Borja Iglesias, kind of an old school big target number nine. And then, oh yeah, by the way, Lamine Yamal and Nico Williams, two very important players. Pedri is one of the best midfielders on the planet as well. He's very important. Fabian Ruiz is very important. Ruiz just won a treble with PSG. He's won back-to-back Champions Leagues with them. Pedri, I think Hansi Flick at Barca is getting the best out of him right now. You've got Martin Zubimendi in this team as well. If you want a little more control in the midfield, you can bring him in. You have a lot of options. You have a lot of different ways you can play. One other element about the Spain team this time around, and it's never happened before. Never in any World Cup has Spain showed up with no Real Madrid players. Barcelona had started to become more of the core of the Spanish footballing identity. Even prior to the Pep Guardiola run there, that era with so many talented Spanish players that came through Barcelona, of course, they're going to all come to the national team together. And in that style, you'd be silly not to play in that way if you have so many players who can give you the base to do it. Now, possession, positional play, the way that Spain has wanted to be since that era. Because if you go back in the past, Spain was a very physical team. Spain was a bruising kind of team. They didn't have a ton of international success before 2008 when they won the European Championships. That was also when Barcelona came to the fore under Guardiola. The identity changed. The identity became much more of that Barcelona style. Now, Barcelona's been mostly up, but sometimes a little down in comparison since 2008. And I think you've seen the national team kind of be that as well. But you have, I believe, 8 Barcelona players in this group this year. So you have a group of guys who know how to play together. And you have a group of guys that play a certain way together. So it's very smart for a manager like De La Fuente to have the team play in that manner. Why would you bring in a group of players who play one way and ask them to do something else? You have built-in chemistry. That's what Spain is doing. That's what they're going to look like in this team. That's what's important about this Spanish group. Now, Lamine Yamal, you're talking about a player who right now it's too much to ask. He's still a teenager. But by the next World Cup, he could be the best player in the world. He turns 19 two days before the World Cup final. So an 18-year-old coming into it, there's pressure, but he's handled that before already with Barcelona. He's won La Liga titles already. He scored a boatload of goals with Barcelona. He's played great in Champions League matches. He's an unbelievable player, and when you talk about somebody who in 1v1 moments where I think a lot of World Cup games will be decided this year, and again, I think late, Yamal's a player who can win it himself. He's a player who can go into a 1v1, win that, and put you into goal, either on his own or with setting somebody up. This group, it's a little bit younger than that golden generation of 2008 to 2012. It's a little more direct, a little faster. I think the difference between the last World Cup, where Luis Enrique led Spain to Qatar, and they were a little slow, a little plodding. They didn't have those dynamic wingers. Now, they don't have Yamal and they don't have Nico Williams tonight. But when you look at even the second tier of Ferran Torres and Alex Baena, they can be fast. They can be direct. They can be dynamic. With Yamal and Nico Williams, this is one of the most dynamic teams in the tournament. So they're in the group with Cabo Verde. They're in the group with Saudi Arabia. Those are the two games you'll see here in Atlanta and Uruguay. Uruguay, very good. Spain's better. Spain's big favorite to win this group. They just scored a second against Peru. They're up 2-0 in this friendly in Mexico. Spain should be able to coast through the group stage a little bit. They're looking at this as a way to dial things up from game one to the end of game three to be in prime position going into the knockouts. I think they're one of the top teams in this tournament. I think they're absolutely a favorite. Can Yamal get back? Can Nico Williams get back? And can they be the Spain that we saw in the last European Championships? We'll see if that journey, we'll see what happens. That journey will start here in Atlanta next Monday afternoon at noon. We'll break all that down next Monday night on Atlanta Soccer Tonight. But we got a whole bunch of shows between now and then. Coming up next, the 3-4-3. A little bit different than you might be used to, but still a little bit of structure. We'll get some headlines. We'll get some updates from around the world. More Atlanta Soccer Tonight on the other side of the break on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
When legacy automation starts impacting visibility and downtime, it may be time to consider modernization. Graybar's automation specialists work alongside your team to help you identify risks and map out realistic upgrade paths without unnecessary disruptions. Get started with a free health check of your operations and see what's possible. Yep. Graybar does that.
Having insurance isn't the same as having State Farm. It's like needing a best man speech, but getting one from some random plus one.
I am honored to be standing here today, also confused and a little hungry. Does anyone want to switch entrees? Pretty sure I checked beef.
You wouldn't settle for just any speech, so don't settle for just any insurance. Get the real deal with State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
In Pittsburgh, we've always forged things. Flavors, art, neighborhoods alive with color, music, and motion. Come see what sparks you at visitpittsburgh.com.
Whether you're on the go or at the ballpark, T-Mobile is built to keep you connected wherever the game takes you. With America's best network, you know your phone is going to work, even in a crowded stadium. Last summer, in the middle of a packed stadium, I lost track of my friends after a long seventh-inning stretch. One quick message and a shared location later, we found each other without missing the next pitch. And when the walk-off hit came, I had the video uploaded and shared before I even left my seat. And on the days I can't make it to the ballpark, streaming the game on the go feels just as electric. No buffering, no interruptions, just every moment as it happens. Find out how baseball hits different with T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/MLB. Legal disclaimer. Fastest based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, H2 2025. Best based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, H2 2025.
And now we end the night with a bit of structure.
Shot! Goal! Goal! Goal!
Let's get the formation set. It's the 3-4-3 on Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back. Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Final segment of the show on radio. If you're listening on the radio, if you're listening on the Odyssey app, you want to continue the soccer conversation, make your way over to the 92.9 YouTube channel. You should be subscribed already. all the shows earlier in the day air on YouTube if you can't catch it, or you want to see what crazy shenanigans Dukes and Bell are getting up to into the studio. You can get it on the 92.9 The Game YouTube page. That's where you're going to get the stoppage time portion of this show. I will be opening a few more Panini World Cup sticker packs. Cross your fingers for me. I still can't get a Lionel Messi card. I still haven't gotten a Christian Pulisic card. I've only gotten two U.S. players. No Messi yet. This is very frustrating. We'll see if I can have any luck tonight. We're going to organize a swap meet on the stickers, by the way, at some point, because I keep running into people. And all weekend, we did shows at Nofo Bruco in Gainesville and in Cumming. People were talking about, oh, man, I got into the stickers. I'm trying to find the album. I'm trying to find the stickers. And we're comparing notes on which CVS has them and which Walgreens has them. They're starting to become pretty readily available now. They were sold out everywhere for a while. I know Costco ran some specials that sold out real quick in some locations, and in some others, you were able to find these deals. So everybody's getting into the Panini sticker pack. This has been a worldwide tradition, I think, for 50-plus years. This is the first time it's felt like it's really kind of crossed over. For me, I've never done it before, but I'm all engaged now, and I need a Lionel Messi sticker, and I have not been able to pull one out of a pack yet. We'll see if tonight's my lucky night. All right, the 343, it's brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. The three, I went a little bit different way this time. Three tallest players in the World Cup. Jarrett Smith would be very happy about this one. You will be hearing from Jarrett Smith on Atlanta Soccer tonight this summer. He is making his way back to Atlanta to visit, and he's going to be put to work here on AST. The three tallest players. The third tallest is Dan Byrne, the defender center back for England at 6'7". According to FIFA, the second tallest is just slightly taller than Dan Byrne. Stjepan Radulic from Bosnia and Herzegovina, just over 6'7". And then your tallest player in this tournament, not a shock, he's a goalkeeper, but Florian Wiggerli from Austria at 6'8.5". That's really tall for a goalkeeper. I would be curious to see him in action getting down low on shots. You start to get past 6'5 for a goalkeeper, and I think then you worry about the height actually being a disadvantage. So I'll be intrigued to see Wiggerli in charge for Austria, see if he gets on the field for them. 6'8.5", the tallest player in the tournament. All right, four headlines from all over the place, and we're going to start in MLS. Austin FC, some good news for them. They've got a manager for next season. The two-time MLS Coach of the Year, Jim Curtin, is taking over at the end of this season. Interim manager Davey Arnold is going to finish out the current campaign. Curtin was in Philly for 11 years. He won the Supporters Shield in 2020. Nearly won MLS Cup in 2022, if not for late-game heroics from Gareth Bale and LAFC. Made the playoffs 7 of 11 times in a low-budget team and low-budget ownership situation. The last season was not very good for Jim Curtin and ultimately parted ways with Philadelphia. Philadelphia's first season last year after he left was extremely good. Supporters Shield winners. This season, not good at all, and the replacement, Bradley Carnell, is already gone. So, Jim Curtin's going to Austin, who have never really gotten going. Since they came into the league, they have not been consistently a top team. I think both managers that were there for long periods of time, and Josh Wolf and Nico Estevez, both around 1.3 points per game. Jim Curtin's been better than that in his run. Now, stylistically, it's extremely different than what we saw from Nico Estevez. Jim Curtin, you know how Philly likes to play. Jim Curtin is not somebody who really cares about having the ball. Nico Estevez and Josh Wolf built teams that wanted the ball. So that might take a little time. I'll be very curious to see that. I feel like that always gets left out of this conversation. We talk about, let's go sign this guy. Let's go hire this manager who won somewhere. Well, does he play soccer in any way resembling what we have? No. Well, whatever, it'll be fine. No, that usually doesn't happen. You're going to have wholesale changes. We'll see how this goes. Number two on the headlines, the Dutch. I talked about some more bad news for them in addition to needing two penalties to beat Uzbekistan today in a closed-door friendly. Jurrien Timber is officially out of the World Cup with a groin injury. 24-year-old Arsenal defender has had a lot of injuries over the course of his last couple of years. He was included in the traveling party to New York, never recovered sufficiently to compete at all in training. Ronald Koeman was direct. They hoped that he would have been able to improve. He has not. So instead of going one short and keeping your fingers crossed, he has made a change. And Lucharo Gurtuita is coming in as the replacement. He'll be replacing Timber on the roster. You have up until 24 hours before your first game to make those roster changes. Now, those changes have to come from your 55-man preliminary roster. Some teams have brought extra guys into their pre-tournament camp. Some teams haven't. We'll see. Timber did play 55 minutes in the Champions League final against PSG, including extra time. Ronald Koeman said that that did not help matters. He didn't exactly blame Arsenal, but he kind of sort of did. It's a tough blow for the Netherlands. They open against Japan on June 13th. Neymar, it's sounding a little positive about Neymar and being able to play in the tournament. He's had a calf injury for what seems like the last 2 years, but he is in the group. He has been medically examined here in the last 24 hours. Brazil issued a statement. Neymar underwent an MRI on Monday. The test showed favorable progress in his treatment, in line with expectations. He will follow the rehabilitation program established by the Brazilian National Team's Medical Committee. Medical Committee, not just one person. Optimistic about Neymar being able to play, at least coming off the bench for Brazil. The 34-year-old is an icon, an absolute icon for Brazil, but hasn't been able to stay healthy for a long time. We'll see if he can give Brazil at least one more magic moment in this World Cup. Number four, Scotland is not making any friends at the moment. So Scotland was scheduled to play Norway. They were going to play behind closed doors friendly. Both teams are based in North Carolina. It was supposed to happen today. Scotland canceled it. They canceled it yesterday because of injuries in the Scotland side. Norway's manager, Ståle Solbakken, he did not appreciate this. He said, "It was at least as surprising to me, and it is unprofessional of Scotland. It is unprofessional that the coach has not called me, that they use the team manager and call and say it after we have finished training. I don't think the injuries they're blaming came from the last training session. That's not the case. It's disappointing. It's unprofessional, but we have to live with that. That's why we adjusted a bit in the game." So you set everything up and you have all this planned out and you know what you're going to do. And you're thinking about how you manage the workload for players and getting them minutes and getting them minutes in competition. And you have a plan to get you to the start of the World Cup. And then Steve Clark is just like, "Nah, we're not going to do that." Norway, not happy at all. A lot of complaining out of the Norway camp. Their team manager, who used to play for Fulham, Brede Hangeland, he said, "We can't do anything about it. We just have to forget about it, make the best of it. But there's been a lot of organization agreements and gentlemen's agreements. And then suddenly they don't want to. I think that was weak." Okay. Steve Clark said, "It was just going to be a training game for an hour at our training ground. We picked up one or two niggles last week and decided it wasn't worth the risk." It's a bad look for Scotland, and it's a bad look from Steve Clark, and it's a bad look that he did not call the manager who he set the match up with. It's a bad look. I think Norway's in the right to be upset about this. Yes, they've had a big injury to Billy Gilmore, and it's affected Scotland for sure. And I know they're concerned about other injuries, but you can't wrap guys in bubble wrap. You have to play games to get ready for a tournament. And when you set an agreement to play another team, when you back out of it, you hurt their preparation for the tournament. I'd agree. I think it's unprofessional. I think it's a really bad look for Steve Clark. And we'll see how it affects Scotland. And if I'm looking at Scotland now, I think this is a bad look for their chances in this tournament. Because if they're that worried about injuries, either they're coming into the tournament scared and they're going to play very defensive in that manner, maybe truly defensive. That's how Steve Clark generally has been. Or just playing very tentatively. Or they've actually got a whole ton of injuries. I don't know. But Scotland odds, I would assume, would not be helped by this. And their reputation hasn't been helped either. All right, three things that make me smile about the game right now. If you have not been following on the social medias lately, there are lots of folks starting to make their way to the United States for the first time. There is a German fan, Freddy with a Y, LA7 on X, who has come to Georgia for the first time in his life. And he is very excited about some of the things he's found, like Taco Bell, like Walmart, like Waffle House, like Fruit Loops, lots of different things that he has just been ecstatic about. One of his tweets, Atlanta is so green, it's crazy. It feels like you're in a forest the whole time. I don't think that was exactly right in Atlanta, but it was close. He went to some of the Stranger Things filming locations. He went to the Martin Luther King National Historic Park, went to the North Georgia Mountains. Very, very cool to see these kinds of messages pop up. You'll get some who take some shots and run their mouth and just smile and nod and say, bless your heart. But you're going to get some folks. And I think one of the things that I really want to do during this World Cup is I want to stop at Waffle House more often than usual, because I want to see how many different people are experiencing hash brown, scattered, smothered, covered, chunked, and topped for the first time in their lives, because that is a life-changing experience. And I think there's going to be quite a few people who get that experience because of the World Cup. It's going to be fun. I'll be trying to share some of those accounts as we go and some of the fun reactions to all the things that maybe we take for granted a little bit. Number two on things that make me smile. You get all kinds of crazy things happening on social media during a World Cup. You have a dog named Ronaldo that is a Chihuahua Dachshund mix from Pennsylvania who has become a viral sensation because he is one of the best canine goalkeepers I've ever seen in my life. I can't say I've seen a whole lot of canine goalkeepers, but just go with me on it. This video is getting millions and millions of views. It's been featured on NBC News. Ronaldo, yes, named after Cristiano Ronaldo, but is a goalkeeper. Maybe should have been named after Brad Kazan. Should have been named after a goalkeeper. But maybe they didn't know when they named the dog that it would be the greatest goalkeeper in canine history. Ronaldo, the canine goalkeeper. That's one of those stories that's fun during a World Cup. But here's one that I've loved seeing in their pre-tournament games. Haiti. First time at the World Cup in 52 years. They, in qualifying, didn't get to play any home games. They had to play games on neutral ground. They could not have games on home soil. And they somehow topped their group. And they got back to the World Cup for the first time in 52 years. The games that they played down in Florida, they played in Fort Lauderdale, they played in Miami. The crowds were amazing. The just volume of the crowd in Fort Lauderdale, where they blew New Zealand out. So cool to see. And these are the kind of stories that you get in World Cups. And it's why I'm actually really excited about the expanded field. Because some of these teams would not get this chance. Some of these players would not get this chance. And it's life-changing. It's life-changing for the people involved in it on the team side. It's life-changing for the fans of that country. It's life-changing for the people that interact with these teams and get a chance to see these teams. Haiti's going to be here. There's going to be kids in the stands who see that game and are like, I want to be like a player from Haiti. They're going to see a player that becomes one of their favorites because of this World Cup. It's just so cool. We got Haiti. We got Uzbekistan. We got Cabo Verde. We have three DR Congo, not quite debuts. Haiti and DR Congo, you're going back to 1974. Uzbekistan and Cabo Verde have never been to a World Cup. You have four teams in the group stage that are coming here that either haven't been in the World Cup in forever or are at their first one. That's a cool story. That's a cool story for Atlanta. It's going to be fun. The tournament starts on Thursday, 3 o'clock, Mexico and South Africa. First game here in Atlanta is noon next Monday. That'll do it for the radio portion of Atlanta Soccer Tonight. If you're listening on the radio, if you're listening on the Odyssey app, click on over to YouTube, find 92.9 The Game. Come join me for some stoppage time. We'll take some questions. We'll see if I get any luck going for me on the Panini sticker packs tonight. And we'll chop it up for a little while about the World Cup. Big thank you to Orin Romain back at the studio. And I will be back with you in 23 hours to talk more World Cup. AST back tomorrow at 10 o'clock. Adios, everybody.
The pressure on data centers has never been greater. Whether you're expanding capacity, supporting AI workloads, or building new facilities, Graybar works alongside you with the solutions, specialists, and logistics expertise you need today. We help you power performance every step of the way, so your operation is ready now. Yep, Graybar does that.
Having insurance isn't the same as having State Farm. It's like needing a best man speech, but getting one from some random plus one.
I am honored to be standing here today. Also confused and a little hungry. Does anyone want to switch entrees? Pretty sure I checked beef.
You wouldn't settle for just any speech, so don't settle for just any insurance. Get the real deal with State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
In Pittsburgh, we've always forged things. Flavors, art, neighborhoods alive with color, music, and motion. Come see what sparks you at visitpittsburgh.com.
Whether you're on the go or at the ballpark, T-Mobile is built to keep you connected wherever the game takes you. With America's best network, you know your phone is going to work, even in a crowded stadium. Last summer, in the middle of a packed stadium, I lost track of my friends after a long seventh-inning stretch. One quick message and a shared location later, we found each other without missing the next pitch. And when the walk-off hit came, I had the video uploaded and shared before I even left my seat. And on the days I can't make it to the ballpark, streaming the game on the go feels just as electric. No buffering, no interruptions, just every moment as it happens. Find out how baseball hits different with T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/MLB. Legal disclaimer. Fastest based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, H2 2025. Best based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, H2 2025.
Latte for Keenan?
That's me.
Hey, you're...
Yeah.
Buying a car online on AutoTrader?
Really? But unlike other sites, you can start online, test drive with a local dealer, then finish online or at the dealership.
Really? Wait, are you...
Yep, it's Keenan.
Able to finish in person without starting the process over?
Really? Your info stays with you every step of the way.
Cool. Enjoy.
It's Keenan Thompson. Buy your car online on AutoTrader. Really?
Now back to our look at the world of soccer.
And Jason Longshore has it all covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
All right. Welcome back to Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Stoppage time edition. This is what happens when we get into this portion of the night. Spain, I think, up 2-0 at the halftime break. I don't think they added another one while we were chatting. Double check that. Good start for them. Really good news about Lamine Yamal and Nico Williams getting closer. Yeah, 2-0. Pedri got the second goal in the 32nd minute. One question to start us off from Ropes. Do you think Pep Guardiola goes to manage a national team sooner or later? Oh, I don't know. It's hard to read because I think he needs a break. I think he wants a break. So I don't think he does anything sooner. But when he comes back, does he want to go national team or does he want? I'm going to go out on a limb and say maybe one more run with a top club team. I think that might be it. I think it might be just one more run at the club level. If he decides, you know what, I'm good. I've done everything I need to do. I'm going to go national team now. I'd like to see him do one more club run, but I don't know where. That's the thing, is when you start to figure out where he could be, he's not going to go anywhere else in England. He's not going to go anywhere else in Spain. He's not going to go anywhere else in Germany. He's been with a club there. He had good relationships with that club. He left on good terms. Barca was a little weird, but he grew up at Barca, so he'd never manage anybody else in Spain. It leaves Italy. It leaves France. Italy would be really intriguing because that is the place in his career as a player that was maybe the most frustrating with him. He was initially found guilty of doping and suspended, but when he appealed it, and I believe it became a court issue, he won and it was rescinded, but it was very frustrating for him. Would he want to go back there, but to who? Because he didn't play for any of the major teams. He played at Brescia. I don't know. I don't know if there's a club there that would be running the way that he would want. And I don't think that's as purely down to going somewhere that is just a good team. I think people take shots at Pep Guardiola for managing really good teams. And I think it's unfair at times. When he came into Barcelona, they were a bit of a mess. And he turned them into something special. When he went to Bayern, now when he signed there, they were not in great shape. And then they turned it around the second half of that season and he did the treble. When he went to Manchester City, it wasn't easy for him. That team needed an overhaul. And he ended up staying a lot longer than anybody expected and went through a couple overhauls. So where he goes next, I keep thinking that there would be another club out there for him. Reportedly, David Beckham was sounding him out and he doesn't want to manage right now. How long he doesn't want to manage is going to be the question, because the closer you get to the next World Cup, and then look, here's the other element, is what national team? Spain would be a possibility, obviously. I think the United States would be a possibility, but I don't know if he'd want to take that right now. Who else? You know, he has worked for Middle Eastern owners. I don't think he would have a problem managing one of the Middle Eastern national teams. I don't know if he would enjoy it as much. I think he would enjoy the building element of it, but I don't know if that would motivate him. Spain obviously would if they needed him. I think he would answer that call, no problem. The U.S. would have to convince him. If, for whatever reason, after the Euros in 2028, Thomas Tuchel leaves then and England is in need, I wouldn't be shocked if he took the England job. Those are probably the three, with the Middle East possibility as well. But I think Spain for sure, England or the US would be the other two that he might take. But the closer you get to 2030, I think the more that pull becomes for him to take a team that would go to the World Cup or try to qualify for the World Cup. I think that's where it gets down to, because he wants the World Cup experience and I think he wants the qualifying experience. So really interesting. I don't know. And I'm fascinated to see what he does. I hope he takes some time off, because he probably needs it, but I hope it's not too long, because I want to hear from him. I want to hear his thoughts on things. I think he's one of the smartest guys who's ever been involved in the game. I think he articulates things incredibly well. He's a fascinating listen. When you get the chance to check out an extended interview with Pep, take it. It's worth your time. He is such a smart guy about how the game works. So I hope he's not gone for long. I want him back in the game. All right. Let's see how we're doing on the Panini sticker packs tonight. And if you have other questions, fire them off in the chat. We will get into those. We'll keep up with what's going on with Spain and Peru. Take a look at the schedule for tomorrow. See what we have coming up. I do have a Lamine Yamal sticker, so I've got a little bit of Spanish representation. I did get an Oyarzabal sticker as well, and he scored tonight, so that's cool. All right, Salim Al-Dawasari for Saudi Arabia. That's a good one. He had an amazing goal against Argentina last World Cup. The Ghana logo. Mohamed Abu Taha from Jordan. Kim Min-jae from South Korea. That's a good one. Bayern Munich center back. Bathusi Abbas from South Africa. Franck Kessier from Côte d'Ivoire. And a player that we talked about a lot tonight on the show, John Arias from Colombia. He's essential, man. He's essential for them, because it can't all be Luis Diaz. John Arias, remember last year, it was Palmeiras, right, in the Club World Cup, that he went off and got the move to Europe. And, I mean, he's at Wolves. Not great. Wolves wasn't great, so can't really put all that on him. But can he be that second fiddle off of Luis Diaz? And then all you need from James and Juanfer Quintero is some vibes and some magic. you don't need them to carry you. I don't know if they're capable of carrying anything right now. All right. Second pack of the night. We'll do three. Joao Neves, PSG, Portugal. Leo Campana from Ecuador. Manuel Ugarte from Uruguay. Idrissa Gueye from Senegal. Amer Jamas from Jordan. Husnidin Aulov from Uzbekistan. I got to work on Uzbekistan, man. The pronunciations are going to be a challenge. And a Mexico team card. All right. Still no Messi. Let's see if the third pack is the charm. It's been funny how many people I've been talking to have been getting into these and trying to find them and wanting to collect them now. I just never had really gotten into it before. Joe Bell from New Zealand plays for Viking in Norway. Oh, man. Not a Lionel Messi, but a sad card to get. Diego Luna. It's always sad when you get the cards of guys who actually did not make the World Cup rosters. Luna should have been here. And I'm kind of over like the Gio Reyna bashing. Like, I mean, he didn't pick himself. I thought Reyna played well against Senegal. I think Reyna is fine. I think Luna would have been better, and I think he deserved it. Sad to get a Diego Luna sticker. I got the mascots. I don't know if that is worth anything extra special, but I got the mascots, Maple, Zayu, and Clutch. Charles de Ketelaere from Belgium. Che Adams, who played very well for Scotland and their big win over Bolivia. Nour Al-Rawabda, Jordan, and Lyle Foster from South Africa. Lyle Foster is going to be huge for South Africa. He's going to have to be. He's going to have somebody to score. It's funny, you get to see exactly how I kind of figure out pronunciations, at least when I don't have a guide in front of me and I don't have time to research it. It's one of the hardest things about doing games, because you don't always get a guide. You don't always get a chance to prep. Sometimes a name gets thrown at you and it's tough. I feel like I've gotten to a point where certain parts of the world, no problem. I can be pretty close off the guess. Others are really tough. I think some of the Middle Eastern ones have been difficult for me. The Scandinavian ones have been difficult. Uzbekistan is extremely difficult. I would need to really take a lot. If I was going to call an Uzbekistan game, I would need to take a whole lot of time to work on that and just practice and just say names a lot. That's the only way for me that I can really get comfortable with it. So when I see it the first time, I'll be a little tentative. But the more that I see a name, the more that I say it, even if it's just saying it to myself, it's important. So it feels natural when you're calling it in a match. It's hard. People who do international soccer on a regular basis, it just adds another layer of difficulty to it. I mean, any league, honestly, and MLS is pretty dynamic in terms of having a whole bunch of different countries represented. But doing a league, you see players over a period of time. And even if it's difficult at first, you get used to it and you get very comfortable saying names. When you see people here and there, it's so hard. Like doing something like UEFA Conference League would be such a challenge, because you might not see those teams very often. You might not see those players very often. You would get a wide range of players and countries involved too. So difficult. The people who do it really well and put the time into it to do it to the best of their ability, and everybody's going to have certain combinations of letters, certain, you know, situations, certain accents, certain names that are just challenging for their accent. Everybody's going to have that one spot that's just hard. But the ones who minimize it and just do such a good job of calling players' names from all over the world and trying to match it as they say it. I argue about this all the time with people, and I think it's very important to try to say it as the player says it, my rule is always I want to say it like their parents say it. I can't get there with everybody, but I think that's my goal. That's my guide. I don't dumb it down. I do not think it is fair to the player. I think it's honestly very disrespectful to the player to just choose not to say their name correctly as they say it, especially when it's provided to you. And Bruno Fernandes is a player for me that comes to mind. I think it's disrespectful for commentators in the Premier League to say his name as Fernandes. That's not his name. He tells you that's not his name. The league provides it. You have a video of him saying his name. And it's not that hard. It's not. Say it. Say it properly. I feel like we've gotten to a point in the world 20 years ago, you could probably get away with it, and you could probably make an argument that if you said it the way that he says it, people would not understand it. But that's why you're there. That's why you have a microphone, right? You explain it. You can explain, yes, it looks like Fernandes, but here is a clip of Bruno saying his name. This is how we say it. We're going to be respectful of him and his family and say his name properly. I think it's important. Again, people make mistakes. That's fine. People mispronounce things in the run of play. That's fine. It happens. You try to minimize it. You don't want it to happen often. Everybody makes mistakes. But when you choose to just not try and just change their name, that's disrespectful to me. And I don't think that should ever be the case. I think you, especially today, where the world is a much smaller place, you should make the effort. To me, that's essential and it's part of the job. That was a soapbox I didn't expect to get on. Other things to jump into. They're back underway in Puebla, 2-0 Spain. Fire off your questions if you got them in the chat. We'll take those. What else did I have on my board here? We're going to do, and I think it'll be probably Wednesday, a full segment on the radio side about all of the rules that are being tweaked. We've talked about some of them here and there so far. The goalkeeper tactical timeout, that one always bugs me. Players can't go to the bench now if the goalkeeper says he's hurt. That's a good thing. VAR getting the expanded powers. I worry about it on corner kicks because I just worry it'll be used inconsistently. And somebody's going to get surprised by it being used where they say that was a pick, that was a foul before the goal was scored. That's going to come back after VAR just because we're not used to it. I hope it's consistent. I worry it won't be. Check in second yellows. That should have happened anyway. I'm glad that's happening. That should have happened before. Corner kicks, if it went out off the wrong team and they can check it before the ball's brought back into play. Totally cool with that. Totally cool with the covering of the mouth in confrontational situations. Absolutely with that rule. No problem at all with it. And I'm glad they clarified, because if teammates are talking and it's friendly and they're talking about things they don't want the cameras to pick up or they don't want the opponents to see to read their lips, yeah, you should be able to do that. If you're in an argument with somebody and you're covering your mouth, you're probably saying something that you don't want other people to find out what you're saying. So you shouldn't say it in the first place. I'm absolutely good with that rule. I do want to see the time-wasting crackdown stuff. That's one we haven't really gotten into yet. So on goal kicks and throw-ins, when referees, and we see it a lot with goal kicks where teams are wasting time, referees will blow the whistle and they'll do the like, hey, come on now, let's go. Now referees will do a visible 5-second countdown whenever they get to that point. Now it's, I think the thing to understand is it's not like they're going to say, okay, the shot goes out and then they're going to start counting to five. I think they're going to use it as a tool to speed people up. So if you are being deliberate in time wasting, the referees will then put their hand up and they will count down for you. I like that. I'm fine with that. Use it. It's a tool for referees to manage the game. Throw in, same thing. Substituted players have 10 seconds to leave the nearest point on the boundary line. I hope that's done intelligently. When somebody's clearly wasting time and they're in a moment to waste time, absolutely punish them for it. Give them a chance to know where you want them to go off the field. I've seen at times where referees haven't exactly been clear in where they want players to leave the field, and then they punish the player. Seen that happen in Next Pro. I don't want to see that happen here. So be clear, be smart, give time. And we're going to have the mandated hydration breaks in the middle of each half. We've seen that in all the friendlies coming up to this point. It shouldn't be a surprise now. You're going to have a whole bunch of people with a whole bunch of takes of, why are we doing this in an indoor stadium? There's no need for a hydration break. It's not that hot. It's because every game in the tournament's played under the same rules. And that's how it should be. And look, this is going to become the norm. I would not be surprised if it becomes the norm at all times. All times, because coaches are going to end up liking it. I know Mauricio Pochettino does not like it. I like Mauricio Pochettino a lot. I disagree with him on this one. I think it's just the nature of where the game's going. I don't think you can really fight it. So embrace it. And he has. And using the video is a really good way to embrace it. I think it's going to be common. I think it's going to be common everywhere. And I do think that the ability to sell advertising time in it, and I hope that broadcasters, and I know Telemundo has said they're not going to use it for this. I don't know if Fox has made a statement about it yet. I don't care if you do a picture-in-picture. I don't care if you do a graphic on the screen as a sponsorship opportunity during that. I'm fine with that. Honestly, look, if we want the game to make more money, if we're at the club level and we want our teams to spend more money, we want leagues to make more money so the teams have more, then they got to have opportunities to make more money. And sponsorships is one of them. And if you create this opportunity, I'm okay with it. I think the increasing heat around the world is just going to make this a necessity anyway. So make the most of it. I like that it's global in this tournament. I think we'll be used to it by the end of this tournament, honestly. I don't think it's going to feel as weird as it has in the friendlies. I like the coaches who use this for good. Spain just scored a third. That was a weird one. I don't know if it came off the defender and got over Galese or deflected off of him, but it was a cross from the end line inside the 18. And it looked like Galese could have gotten it, but I don't know if he read the spin or what. It was very strange looking. We are waiting on a replay here on FS2. But Spain at a second. Is that Baena? Or a third, sorry. Through ball from Rodri. No, it's off of Galese. I don't think it came off the defender in front. No. Didn't touch the defender. Galese got his right hand up to it, and then it went in. Oh, Pedro. That's not a good one. Might be why Peru's not playing in the World Cup. No bueno. It was not Baena who had that. It's an own goal, and it's going to be on Galese. 3-0 Spain. Totally comfortable. This is exactly where they wanted to be. They got time for a lot of guys. They'll probably make subs here in the next 5 minutes and get to the 60th minute mark. All good. One other one I had on stoppage time, and if you guys have any questions, fire them off in the chat. We'll get into whatever you guys want to. But this article that the AP published, the weird and wonderful soccer phrases fans will bring to the World Cup. I always love this kind of stuff because you never know exactly where the reporter's coming from on it. Steve Douglas is your writer for this one. Sometimes it's very tongue-in-cheek. Sometimes it's very naive. It can be all over the place. This one was okay. The first line in the story was, in squeaky bum time, the false nine pulled off a nutmeg and scored a worldie in the top bin. You probably understand all those phrases. Not everybody does. There are some of those that I use, and there are some of those that I cannot say with a straight face in commentary. Squeaky bum time is one of those. I don't think you can say that if you're not from England, in my opinion. I do not feel comfortable saying that at all. They give Alex Ferguson credit for the coining of the phrase. If you don't know it, it's the late stages of a match or a season or a tournament or whatever, where players and fans get tense and nervous. It is in the Oxford English Dictionary, which that's kind of funny. Define the saying. This is the Oxford English Dictionary for you. A reference to the sound of someone shifting restlessly on plastic seating during tense closing stages of a contest. Yeah, that's pretty accurate. Parking the bus. Yeah, I use that one all the time. and you guys know if you listen to me, you know that is about being defensive. It's typically an inferior team, or a team that is shorthanded, or a team that has a lead late that maybe is a little unexpected, and they play ultra defensively. Some teams come in and do that from the jump. Usually, you end up finding the bus keys and then parking it. Jose Mourinho is the one that they give credit to for bringing that into the wider vernacular. I don't remember where I picked it up. It was probably Mourinho. He got it, or he said it first against when he was at Chelsea in 2004 against Spurs. He said Spurs, quote, might as well have put the team bus in front of their own goal. I'm sure it was used before that, but maybe that's where it became more common. False nine. I think this gets overused. I think this gets used in ways that is not accurate to it. The way that the AP describes it, when a player starts a match as the nominal striker, but constantly moves into deeper positions on the field to be harder to mark and create confusion among opposition defenders, they are said to be playing as a false nine. I try to get more specific when I use false nine, because in the modern game, I think normal strikers, normal nines, drop into deeper positions to try to be harder to mark or drop into wider positions. I think false nine, that's not always a false nine. To me, a false nine is very specifically when you don't play more often than not with a nine. There's not somebody in the position. That's the idea behind it. Lionel Messi, I mean, this has been done way before Lionel Messi. Pep Guardiola kind of brought it back out of mothballs. But Messi in Barcelona did this often, not all the time, but often, where he would start the game, line up in a nine position, but then just not be there. So he's false. He's a false nine. It's not when the guy's a nine and then drops out of that position and then reappears in that position. And I've had this conversation about Alexi Maranchuk with Atlanta United. When he's played as the nine, I think he plays it as a nine. Does he drop more? Yes, because he's comfortable doing that. But does he appear in positions where the nine should be? Yes. I think he's just a mobile nine. When he plays as a nine, I don't think it's a false nine, because he's more often in the positions you want your nine to be. So I don't consider that a false nine. I think it's accepted if you say it that way. But what I like is, now that we're starting to get into this and we're starting to talk about false fullbacks, and false fullback is the one that I've heard. False winger, I think I heard at one point. That one was kind of hard to drill down. The false fullback is an interesting one. I can see how you can get there, but it feels like a little bit of a stretch. It feels like it's trying a little too hard. More terms from the AP. The worldie, I think everybody's pretty comfortable with that one. I don't say it. I don't know. It's just not something I ever grew up with, but it's very common now from British slang. Just a world-class goal. I'd usually just say it's a world-class goal. Total football, the Dutch national team of the 70s, where players interchange positions freely. It's just one of those phrases that gets thrown around a lot. It's not always accurate to it. I don't really use it because I don't know if it is as well known now. And I think it's kind of been twisted into different things. So I don't really go there on it. I'll just talk about the team being fluid and then explain it more. The nutmeg, and I'm very specific on the nutmeg. I have some very specific rules on this. These are mine. A nutmeg is if you kick the ball between the opponent's legs. And the AP, I give them full credit. They say the act of kicking the ball between your opponent's legs to either run around and gather it yourself, or to pass it to a teammate. It has derivatives around the world, from the petit pont, the little bridge in French, to a caño in Spanish, tunnel in Scandinavia. I like all those. The caño, I'm a big fan of. But they describe it correctly. To me, it is not a completed nutmeg if you do not get on the other end of it, or if your teammate doesn't receive the pass. If you lose the ball, not a nutmeg. You don't get credit. Doesn't go down in the stat sheet. They used to actually track this. I can't remember who led MLS in nutmegs one year, but yeah, it's I don't track it, but I don't give credit for a nutmeg if you don't get on the other end of it. And I'm very particular about this. Ask Mike Conti. Sitter. I don't really use the phrase either. Again, it's one that's very well known now. You have an easy goal and you don't score. I don't know. It's just one that I don't really use. I just describe it in a different way. It's not a phrase that I ever, again, grew up with. It's not one that I really, it's just not part of my speech patterns. I don't really go there. I do use Panenka. That is one that is on the list, and that comes from a specific player, a Czech player, Antonín Panenka, who converted the title-clinching penalty in the European Championship final for Czechoslovakia against West Germany in 1976. It is when you chip a penalty slowly, cheekily. I don't say cheeky either. That's another one, another phrase that it gets overdone a lot, and I feel like it sounds weird if you're not with a some form of a British accent. But a Panenka, yeah, I use that one. I use that one a lot when people try it. I think it's extremely risky. Clean sheet's common. I think everybody knows clean sheet by now. It's always funny when I do high school and college stuff and it's a shutout. College strictly uses shutout for the stat. I'll say clean sheet. When I'm doing a game that uses different terminology, like college games, I will kind of use both so people understand, like, hey, I get it, but I'm going to use what I'm more comfortable with. I say clean sheet. I've always said clean sheet. That's always been common to me. Top bins. That's one that I've never really done a lot either. It's another kind of British slang term. It's in the Oxford English Dictionary as well. Practice sessions of targets in each of the top corners that resemble a bin, a trash can in Great Britain. Postage stamp. I'm sure I've used that at least once. I always like the one, and I'm trying to remember who should get credit for it because I heard a commentator use it and I've borrowed it a few times. It wasn't Ray Hudson. I want to say it might be Max Bretos. That it's up in the corner where the spiders live. I like that one. This one's actually really good. In Brazil, they say a one in the top corner, and I'm going to butcher the Portuguese. Onde a coruja dorme, where the owl sleeps. I might have to steal that. Where the owl sleeps. Good job, Brazil. I love when we get those kind of phrases and get to bring them into games. I enjoy that. I will much more often go for a translated Spanish phrase than a British phrase. Because I just didn't grow up with around a bunch of Brits with soccer. It was always Americans. And then when I was coaching and really got involved more from a professional standpoint, it was Latin America. So, like, all the British slang was just never normal for me. So I don't really go there. I will go into then the translated stuff, or I'll use kind of my own phrasing. So interesting. That's the AP for you. That's their article. And they did a good job with it. That felt really fair. Like, it wasn't dumbing it down. It wasn't being cutesy. It wasn't making fun of anything. It was just a bunch of phrases people might not know. I'd be curious to talk to people this summer who are getting into this and how many of those kind of phrases they know. It's always fascinating. That's what's cool about this game is we have our ways of talking about it and describing it here in the United States. It's very different than Mexico. It's very different than South America. It's very different than Europe. Countries within Europe do things differently. Countries within South America do things differently. Asia, Africa, same thing. We all have our different ways of interpreting the game, which is awesome and a lot of fun. And I like that we do that. I don't, and this is something I fight against here in this country a lot. I feel like way too often in the United States, we feel like we have to use what the Brits say or what the Germans say or anywhere, but usually from a shared language to be authentic. We have to do that to be authentic. As Peru gets a goal in the 66th minute. Vélez. Jairo Vélez, first goal of the game. Peru down 3-1 against Spain. I'm completely fine with some of the more American terminology, for sure. I have no problem with it. I just want people to understand it. I think there are certain things that are acceptable or certain things that aren't. And that evolves over time. And that happens for any country too, by the way. Like, there are old school English phrases that were used in the 70s, 80s, 90s that don't get used in commentary today, or in punditry today, or written about the game today. It does change in every place, but I hope in this country that we get to a point, and I don't know, might not happen anytime soon for us, but I hope that we get to a point where we are comfortable in doing things our way and not being shy about that, not being afraid of that. Still be absolutely respectful to the game and do things a little bit differently, like what we saw, and I ranted about it yesterday a little bit because of a lot of people complaining about it. What we saw with the pregame introductions for the send-off game in Chicago, what we saw with them playing a little bit of Freebird on the PA, like that kind of stuff, it's fun, it's cool, it's different. It's what we're used to in our sports here, and it's what a lot of, you know, maybe new fans would be into. It doesn't detract. I think we need to stop worrying about offending longtime fans with trying new things like that, or just doing things that are maybe used in other sports. It's not disrespectful. We need to always be looking to grow the game without losing what it is. I think Pochettino's commentary about the cooling break, the hydration breaks, and it just reminded me because they're going to one now in Puebla, about losing the game, and I think Marcelo Bielsa talked about the Americanization of the game, and of course pinning it all in the United States because that's an easy target. It's not a U.S. thing, and second, it's something that is going to be needed. The game is, one, being played at a faster pace than ever before. Two, being played more often than ever before. Players are playing a lot of games. Three, the world is hotter than it used to be. Even though we've really lucked out so far in 2026, it has not really gotten crazy hot here in Atlanta, and I worry that it's going to during the World Cup. But in general, temperatures are up. So you need to adjust. A 3-minute hydration break in the middle of the half is not going to ruin the game. It will change it a little bit because coaches will have the opportunity to coach during that 3 minutes. Coaches will have another opportunity, because they don't get many, to impact the game. Players will be able to chat in those moments. Yeah, you got to find your rhythm again right after. Players will adapt really quickly. It's not going to dramatically change the game. I think it will in a short period of time for the people who use it well. That'll be the change that we see early, is coaches who get an opportunity to actually coach in that 3 minutes, make a couple of key points, and change the game with that. That's the opportunity to change the game. I think just giving the players the break and the hydration and the opportunity to catch their breath, it's a good thing, and it hopefully will lead to better soccer for us, the fans. The ones who get excited about this, the ones who are spending their time talking soccer, the ones who are spending their time listening to people talk soccer, the ones who are engaged with everything right now. And there is so much of it right now. There's so much to consume. There's no way any of us can watch it all, read it all, see it all. So any of you who spend your time with me listening to Atlanta Soccer Tonight on YouTube, on the radio, on demand as a podcast, thank you. Thank you. Thanks for being part of the journey. And we're almost there, just a couple days away from the start of this tournament. 3 o'clock on Thursday, Mexico and South Africa. El Tri trying to get revenge in the Shabalala game, a rematch from the opening game in 2010. I love that we have two of those, 2002. France will try to get their revenge against Senegal. We'll see. Mexico's playing really good coming into this. They're going to be a fun one to watch. I'll give you two bits of promotion from the SDH network before I go. One, podcast got posted this afternoon. I think it ended up about 45 minutes of a chat that was supposed to be 15 with Ed Joyce, the head coach of the Georgia State women's soccer team, and Brett Surrency, the head coach of the men's team at Georgia State. And we talked about college soccer a little bit, but we talked about the World Cup. We talked about soccer in this country. We talked about so many different things, and we just kept going. We talked about coaching. It's a really fun conversation. It's available wherever you get your Soccer Down Here podcast. It's out now. I'm going to have some clips from that on tomorrow's show, and we'll have an article up at soccerdownhere.net. And the other thing, as we get closer to the game starting, you're going to have kind of a natural rhythm from what we're doing here on AST and what we're doing on SDH. So the day will end with Atlanta Soccer Tonight, usually at 10 o'clock. Friday, it'll be from 6 to 8 before the U.S. game on the radio. Saturday, it will be from 5 to 7:40, so kind of in the middle of the evening. Sunday, it's 9 to 11, so it's going to move around a little bit, but usually it will end the night, maybe with the last game. Sometimes we'll have stoppage time that'll carry over, and we'll be watching games like we are right now with Spain and Peru, 3-1 to La Roja of Spain. But then the next day, you'll have the Morning Espresso newsletter from Soccer Down Here. You can subscribe on Beehive. If you go to Soccer Down Here on social media platforms or soccerdownhere.net, you'll see the subscription link for the newsletter. If you like to catch up your news, I was somebody who always grew up reading the newspaper. If you like to read your news in the morning, it's about a 10-minute read. I try to format it in a way that is very skimmable. If there's something that grabs your attention, cool, you can read the 3, 4, 5 paragraphs. If it's not fancy, you can skip it. You can move on to the next one. That will be every day from here through the World Cup final. And then SDH AM with John Nelson, that will be every day from 9:05. Usually till 11 through the final. So Saturdays and Sundays for Espresso and for SDH AM and for Atlanta Soccer Tonight. We will have all the coverage. We will be talking about all the teams. We will be trying to cover all of the stories as much as we can, not just a few teams here and there. We want to consume this entire tournament, and we want to share that with you. And thank you for sharing your time with me this evening. I'll be back tomorrow, 10 o'clock on radio, on the Odyssey app, and on YouTube, and then we'll have a little bit of extra stoppage time. Tomorrow, we are trying to arrange a Panini sticker chat session on the stoppage time portion of the show with Madison Cruz and Sophia Cupertino. So stay tuned. That is the plan for tomorrow. Wednesday, we'll go hardcore into the preview, the predictions. We'll give you final predictions as teams get ready to start this thing on Thursday. Have a good rest of your evening. Big thank you for spending your time with me, and I will be talking to y'all very soon. Adios, everybody.
At Graybar, we know your time is money. That's why our services go beyond parts and products. With kitting, pre-assembly, wire carts, and Graybar smart reels that keep you moving. We stage materials and manage logistics so you can spend less time sorting and more time installing. And with locations nationwide, we deliver when and where you need it, working to make your job easier every step of the way. Yep, Graybar does that.
Jake from State Farm. I just beat my running PR, so I'm celebrating with a Banana Bonanza smoothie.
Hey, and you can keep celebrating when you create an affordable price just for you by bundling your home and auto with the State Farm Personal Price Plan. Go bananas.
I will. Hey, make it a large.
Bundling. Just another way to save with the Personal Price Plan. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
In Pittsburgh, we've always forged things. We just forge them differently now. Flavors bold enough to stop you mid-bite. Art bright enough to change the way you see the world. Neighborhoods alive with color, music, and motion. In Pittsburgh, everything we ever forged was made to spark something more. Come see what sparks you at visitpittsburgh.com.
Whether you're on the go or at the ballpark, T-Mobile is built to keep you connected wherever the game takes you. With America's best network, you know your phone is going to work, even in a crowded stadium. Last summer, in the middle of a packed stadium, I lost track of my friends after a long seventh-inning stretch. One quick message and a shared location later, we found each other without missing the next pitch. And when the walk-off hit came, I had the video uploaded and shared before I even left my seat. And on the days I can't make it to the ballpark, streaming the game on the go feels just as electric. No buffering, no interruptions, just every moment as it happens. Find out how baseball hits different with T-Mobile at T-Mobile.com/MLB. Legal disclaimer. Fastest based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, H2 2025. Best based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, H2 2025.
Latte for Keenan?
That's me.
Hey, you're...
Yeah.
Buying a car online on AutoTrader?
Really? But unlike other sites, you can start online, test drive with a local dealer, then finish online or at the dealership.
Cool. Enjoy.
Buy your car online on AutoTrader. Really.